So I just, all right. So welcome everyone. I just restarted the recording for the webinar. Welcome to our blood type and nutrition webinar. We started off with a little technical difficulty. We had our internet, one of our internet providers go down and we had to switch to the other one, and that actually breaks the connection and basically had to start all over again. So welcome, and Kim is with me, and with that, we'll get started. And Kim, tell us about a little bit about the importance of why it's important to learn about our blood type.
Hey, here we go again. For all you guys that were listening before, it's a repeat. basically, every single organism that we have has a very simplified system of identify self or not self. So they are equipped with different systems that allow these different structures or these little chemical mechanisms as part of that organism to see if it belongs to them or not. So it's kind of like a lock and key system to see if it fits, to see if they match. And sometimes there are things that come in that kind of mimic those that don't, and it confuses our system. But the blood type is actually one of the most fundamental methods that the body utilizes to kind of determine self or not self. So that's why when you're donating blood, it has to be compatible, not only within that compatibility, you know, certain donors can give, there's universal donors, universal receivers. And within that, though, there are even antibody structures in certain ones that work and don't work. So it's a pretty complex system of how things match and don't match and how the body either accepts it or rejects it. And when it rejects it, it has certain mechanisms that it does to protect the body in order to do that. So we'll go to the next slide. And just some of the history behind this. So very much just like a fingerprint, everybody has a unique type, a unique blood type in addition to, you know, antibody structures and everything that's in it. But Carl Landsteiner proved that there were four different types of the human blood, and then there are a lot of other substantiations with that. The research that was done by Peter Diadamo and his dad, who was a chiropractor, also demonstrated a correlation between the blood type and the foods. And this is just chemical components with that lock and key system that they match or they don't match, and how does the body respond to them if they don't match. So he was looking to gain historical data and archive and do some dark cell microscopy or phase contrast testing with the glutination serum to see, you know, matching structures on that. And that's where he put out the eat right for your type, the live right for your type. And basically the one I refer more to for patients with recipes in it is the cook right for your type. So next slide. You can determine what your blood type is fairly easily. I mean, if you're going to the lab to do blood, a lot of times they have a whole different code you have to put on there to even get your blood type, even if you're already going in to get lab work done. So you can get some test kits, and it's just four little drops of blood, and you activate the card with some water on the antigen serums and put the four drops on there, and then it'll have a little a color-coded thing in there to tell you which type you are. And these are fairly accurate. A lot of times, you know, unless you're having surgery done or you have to donate or accept donated blood, they don't really type your blood. Okay. So let's look at how each of these structures are different. On the blood type structures, the O, you can see, it doesn't have what's called an antigen. It's minus an antigen. It just has what's called a fucose stump. And then the A has an antigen, which is N-acetylgalactosamine. The B is D-galactosamine. And then, of course, the AB has both of those. So O, with this fucose stump, makes it a universal donor. AB is a universal receiver. And then A and B require either O or B or A. And let's go into some of the genetics with it.
Yeah.
Because
yeah, can I kind of talk about this? Because uh-huh. This is actually kind of a little bit based on my own genetics, because my mom was an O and my dad was an AB, which means that, you know, in my family you had all of the types. And so O is recessive. So basically, I have I'm an A blood type, which means I got an A gene from my dad and O gene from my mom. And I married someone who is an O, and I have some kids who are O's, and I have some kids who are A's. My sister is a B, so she got the B from my dad. And I don't know what her husband is, but I just, you know, hypothesized, you know, okay, let's say that her husband was an A type. That means that one of their kids could get an A and a B, or they could get an A and an O, or a B and an O, or yeah. So you could, from that combination of an A and an O and a B and an O, you could actually get all four, because you could get an O from both parents, or an A and an O, or a B and an O, or an AB. So that's how it works.
The percentages go way down on it being an O. It's only like a half of 1%, because most likely if you have an A father and a B mom, you're more than likely going to have an AB child 99% of the time.
Okay. So.
Okay. So that's kind of how everything comes about. And then how we put this together with food is there are actually lectins in the food. And these are just chemicals. Every single food has a lectin in it. It doesn't mean that a lectin's a bad thing. It's just a piece of the puzzle. So they also have, you know, other things in them that are called chitin-binding lectins. And these are similar to some of the wheat lectins we're going to talk about in a minute. Chitins are just these long strands of the N-acetylglucosamine, which is the same as what the A type is. And what happens is it's just an identification. So if we go back, we said it either identifies self or not self, and it flushes the irritant. So the lectins that become incompatible with that little antigen, or the lack of antigen in the case of the O, start causing all of these different biochemical reactions in the body. And they start the blood to form a barrier. It's like, okay, this is not self, so I want to thicken up, and I want to surround it so that I kind of clump together. If any of you do live cell, it's like the relays that you see in there. And this kind of, it creates a reduced oxygen environment too, because they're trying to smother and surround the irritant so that it can't get in and harm any of the tissues. But in the case of doing that, they're all gathered around that. It kind of leaves the body susceptible in other areas to have things like not as well protected as an identifier. And this is not just like, you know, oh, one-time thing, this came in. You establish like an identification mechanism. So when you keep doing the same things over and over, then the lectins kind of build up and they create more agglutination that lasts for a longer period of time as an immune defense. And then they also interfere with certain protein digestion. So they can reduce how the hormones combust or how the hormones cross into through the interstitial tissue into the cell. And then they also can reduce absorption, because once you bind something with those lectins or the agglutination and it gets stuck in there, it doesn't mean it just goes to that one thing and, you know, gets all stuck and protective of that. It means other nutrients get kind of stuck in that little web as well, like a filter. So the premise behind the whole blood type nutrition is understanding which foods have lectins that get activated that are not compatible with your certain antigen structure or lack of, and that's how the body reacts to it or not reacts to it. So in keeping the blood from becoming sticky, and you can see if your blood is sticky or not without having live cell too by looking at your albumin and globulin ratio in your blood. And if it's high, then usually you have sticky blood. Okay, let's go to the next one.
Okay,
so on the food choices, you're going to see, if you've read the book, which most of us have by now, I think the first one came out in 97, 98, so it's been around for a bit. We've all studied it. We've all dissected it. We're all trying to understand it. We have a lot of other factors to consider, too, that we're going to get into a little bit tonight as well. There is a list of beneficial foods. These do not create agglutination in the body, and they match more compatible, more of a walk-and-key kind of system. And the beneficial foods are supplements that act like a medicine. So that means that they can actually help with the transport of nutrients, the building of immunity, and general overall protectiveness, like, you know, they prevent against oxidation in the cell. Neutral foods are just your foods or supplements that act like foods. So you are getting calories from them. They don't help make a barrier with oxidative stress. They don't really trigger the immune to perform better or anything. They're just fuel. And then the avoids are the ones that act like a poison, or they cause the stickiness or agglutination in the blood. And there are different factors in each of the foods that can cause this. Okay? There's another piece of the equation. Now, a lot of times this doesn't get addressed, but I find that in doing nutritional things, it's really important because you do have secretors and non-secretors. And this is how the digestive system works. Of if you are a non-secretor, you're not going to produce, the antigen structure is not going to be present in bodily fluids. So like saliva, things, and the secretors, which is the most common, they do express that blood type in their body, and they do kind of wallow out the bad guys more and kind of kill them in that first line of immune defense. But the non-secretors kind of let them in and say, okay, you know, you're going to get in. You kind of look like us. Okay, go ahead. And then it doesn't understand that it doesn't fit till it gets to that blood level. So the distinct link between non-secretors and family history of alcoholism and diabetes is high, and there's usually a little point test that you can do, and I won't go into all of it, but it's kind of like you score so many points if you have a history of alcoholism in your family, a history of type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, things like that. So there is, however, a saliva by that's really inexpensive, and just do the secretor test to see if you're a secretor or non-secretor. I usually recommend that for people that say, well, I'm an A, but I don't eat like an A, you know, or I'm an O and I don't eat like an O, because then you might be a non-secretor, which means that your immune structure is even further, you know, weakened so that you have to eat a little differently.
Now, as clarification, we're talking about you secrete these antigens into your saliva and bodily fluids, which means that your body has a greater ability to recognize something that's compatible or incompatible, and that means you also have a little bit better immune response. Right, Kim?
That's right. You recognize it at that first level of immune defense, which first level of immune defense is your mucosal membranes. It's saliva. It's the mucosal membrane within the nasal cavity so that the body can identify it. It's skin. So even with sweat, you know, so you're identifying it at a much earlier stage one level for immune defense instead of waiting till stage three that it's actually in the blood. So,
yeah, just that was a clarification someone said, asked about secretor of what? And it's those immune factors that whether you're secreting them into your saliva and so forth.
Right. Yes. So, with the compliance on this of using it as a nutritional guideline, it can be used so many different ways, and we are going to get into some more technicalities of it in just a minute. But as far as compliance, you know, if you're pretty much just working on a maintenance program and you just want to clean the blood up, and especially if you're cleansing, then if you're over age 55, you know, you do about 80% compliance. So, you know, 5 days a week, you're good. And then under age 55, about 70%. And for things that are more dramatic or a more weakened immune system, or you're working on a particular issue or diagnosis, then you're going to go a little bit higher on that of following it, 80 to 90%. If you want to use it as a weight loss program, it really wasn't introduced to be a weight loss program. There's just a lot of testimonials of people that have complied by 100% that they've dropped weight or released weight on it. I think it's probably because you're cleaning up the blood and you are dropping a lot of those toxins, and the body tends to use fat cells to store excess toxins. So it's probably because of the cleansing action of it that you do start releasing weight.
But in other words, you don't have to do this 100% to be healthy. You can fudge on a few of the void foods, and it's not going to kill you.
And I don't follow it 100% with most people anyway, because there are some factors we're going to look at as to why as well. So I think it's a really good guideline, and I think it brings it to the forefront of most people's consciousness of what works for their body and what doesn't, and it makes it kind of a more detailed schematic than what most people are using to help them with better nutrition choices. But, you know, it's an integrative part of nutrition. So some of the supplements also have those same reactions, and we're going to look at which supplements work the best for each of the types and see which ones can help some of the general. And again, we're kind of going into a stereotypical thing, and it's not saying that all O's or all A's or all B's or AB's have this. It's just saying as a general rule of thumb, we're going to look at some predominant situations and what supplements can help with that. So let's go into the O type first. Okay? We already talked about it being a universal donor. I don't know. O is for obnoxious, I think.
Since you're an O blood type, you can say that.
I'm an O. I can say that. Yes, we supposedly, you know, the original hunter-gatherer carnivorous ripped the adrenal gland out of the buffalo on the plane and ate it, you know. So they are the oldest, and they tend to be the strongest, and sometimes too much so that we push too many things out, including nutrients, and we do that a lot with minerals. So it can be almost to the point of autoimmune that we're attacking self in some things. But usually they're natural leaders. They usually have a fairly balanced digestive tract. I'm not saying that, you know, you can go eat rusty nails and your digestive system's going to react to that, but, you know, pretty much not a lot of things when an O is in balance are going to disrupt their digestive tract. And again, the natural defenses against infection and immune, because most of your bacteria and virals have different antigen structures on them. So the O automatically knows, hey, this does not look like me, and it rejects it at the first level of immune defense. So let's look at some other things with the O, with the strengths and the weaknesses. They also break down fats and proteins fairly easily. Now, I will put an exception in here. If it is an O blood type that has had the gallbladder removed, they might have to do a little digestive enzyme assistance with that. Usually, O's handle stress very well in the short term. So I kind of liken it to a volcano, is like it just erupts, and then once it's done, it's done. You know, 5 minutes later, you go back, and the O has been totally, like, irrationally explosive, and 5 minutes later, they're like, mad about what? No, nothing happened. It's all good. Okay, so they do let go of that stress fairly easily. Their cortisol level goes up, and it peaks, and they usually can bring it back down when they're in balance. They do tend to run a little bit thinner blood, and especially your O negative. Some of the weaknesses are that they kind of thrive on stress. It's kind of the motivation behind O's, so sometimes they get overtaxed by it. And when they do, it's like once they're down for, they've got to find a way to rejuvenate to get back up. So they have to go and have that rejuvenation time. They are risk takers. They are adrenaline junkies. They are a vented anger type person, that they do not have an issue showing you that they're angry usually. And again, we're going over generalities. You know, a lot of your socialistic conditioning and your life patterns that you were brought up with, if you were an O that you were never allowed to speak, of course, that's going to be different. But for the most part, O's tend to be a little bit more outgoing. They tend to be they have that liver energy that can be a little bit moodier, and also they tend to go into the hyperactivity, especially like the ADHD, because their brain is always going. They get bored very easy. They are not repetitive task people. They also don't do so well breaking down certain carbohydrates. So going to go back to a little bit of that with the carbohydrate issues, because some of these chitins that we talked about, these long polymers, they have a binding activity. So there are certain things in there that, you know, when you go through the food stuff, there are going to be binders in there that the O can't break down, and more so on the grain category with a lot of the O things. But we'll get into specifics on that in just a minute. Okay.
There you go.
Okay. So on the grains, wow, I think we could spend probably 2 hours on this. on the grains, it's the corn, okay, I just have to say, I really just avoid corn because there's no corn that's not a GMO anymore. All of our corns have been being cross-pollinated and changed since like probably 1968. So the GMOs are going to make a difference in how your blood reacts to it. Pesticides are going to make a difference, whether it's sprouted or not. It's going to make a difference. Whether it's fermented or not, it's going to make a difference. So it's going to take some of the foods that if you ate them in a processed form as opposed to a sprouted form, it's going to change them from an avoid to probably a neutral. So it does make a difference. The wheat, there are other things that have that wheat lectin and that chitin-binding lectin that actually function identical to wheat, and that's potato and some of your barley and your rye and some of your white rice. So those are grains that, you know, aren't, depending on how they're grown or whether they're sprouted or not, they're going to have similar lectin activities. Dairy products are an avoid for O types, and getting into some of the structure of that, I want to clarify on the dairy that it is an A1 beta casein dairy that is a void. That is the histidine. That is on the chromosomal, the amino is the histidine, which causes an inflammatory response and causes lectin binding activity. A2 beta casein is proline. Proline is not an avoid for O's. That's your goat, camel. I don't think we have camel on the chart, but camel's in there. And there are certain A2 cows. So this is different. So we get down, it's pretty like much like a blood type. You know, you have a fructose step and you have an antigen. You also have antibodies that match each of those structures. So when you're looking at that, the A2 does not create that inflammatory and lectin binding activity.
So there are different species of cows, what you're saying, that that there are some cattle out there that O blood types would not react to, but the typical kind of cattle that are being raised, the dairy products do have that reaction.
Right, and it was the original cattle, like from 5,000 years ago, that are most known to Africa and New Zealand and India. So, I mean, there are some in the U.S. too, but that's basically it was the original. The original cow, you know. then we like, you know, certain beans. Again, it's kind of like I want to bring in the Paleolithic diet here because I get a lot of questions on that, because there are certain foods you can't do raw that you have to soak or you have to change some of the chemical constitution to be able for the body to break them down, and beans are this way. So, you know, when you do the soaking in the water and the slow cooking, it changes the activity of it. There are still some here, though, with the lentils that do cause agglutination with the O. The nuts and the seeds, same way. You know, if they're roasted, it's pretty much like all the nuts become an avoid because this was tested on raw nuts. Then going into your fats and your oils and some of the things that create that as well, you know, a lot of your soy oil, especially like grapeseed, all of those oils that are altered and chemical heat, anytime you take something higher than 118 degrees to alter its heat structure too, then you've created a lectin response and agglutination in the body. It activates the lectins. This is like tomatoes. Once they're cooked, it activates that lectin. So the other things on here, the cauliflower, the red and the white potatoes, oranges and tangerines, those are some, you know, because they're in the raw form. And the white potatoes, again, is because of the GMO. Now, within these structures of the voids as well, the herbicides and the pesticides, along with the GMOs, are going to play a factor of what the body's responding to. Is it actually responding to the antigen structure in the food, or is it responding to a chemical barrier that has been attached to that? And that's what happens with all GMOs, is they have altered DNA. So we just have to say it's an avoid on all GMOs. So going into the beneficials. That's so negative, talking about all the it's like, let's get on to the good stuff. On the major beneficials, and this is for I have some of those that can't eat red meat, and red meat's listed. There's a difference, because if you have grain-finished beef, your O's are going to react to the grains that are in the beef. So it's going to be harder to digest, and that's why some O's can't break down the beef. Also, cooking. I mean, when you overcook red meat, nobody can break it down. It becomes a carcinogen. So this is based on a rare to medium rare on the red meat, and it is a new term, grass-finished, not grass-fed, because grass-fed means, you know, they can put them out in the pasture for 30% of the time and still finish them with grain, and we still have the grains in there. So it is a grass-finished red meat. Buffalo, you know, lamb and venison, any wild game pretty much is going to be a neutral to beneficial for most of your O's, because that's that hunter-gatherer. And oh, gee, would it be because they didn't inject them with any antibiotics and any hormones and any vaccines as well? That's probably a big factor. You know, if you'll notice on the charts that are available, the blood type charts from Treolite, there is a different category there for chicken and organic chicken. Of course, I don't know if you can find organic chicken unless you're raising your own anymore. But it went from an avoid to a neutral. So those are some things to look at. Our food sources are really contaminated. And I won't keep going into this because I know we want to focus on the blood type. So I'll just recommend a movie. It's called Food, Inc. And then also Farmageddon. Just watch those. They're awesome. I mean, you'll yell at your TV, and you probably won't ever want to go to the supermarket again. But watch them.
So one thing I want to clarify here, because I think some people are kind of, you know, may not totally getting the point, is all this testing was done, but we don't necessarily know, you know, in some cases, you know, whether the food tested when the selectin testing was done was organic or non-organic, cooked or raw, right? So in some cases, there are certain foods that maybe being organic or being prepared in a different way might be okay for your blood type, even though the chart says avoid.
Exactly. Because some of this was pulled from historical data.
And the same token, there's the food that might say beneficial, but if you're getting a really bad quality of it, you know, with a bunch of pesticides or whatever in it, it still may come out bad for you as well.
Exactly. You know, so it's about quality of food is the number one thing to get from this, I think. And then choosing the things that are beneficial on the chart, by all means, you know, definitely. And then, of course, they're going to be even more beneficial when you're choosing, you know, your organic and the right types of food. So, again, we're back to, you know, this is a good general guideline to raise conscious awareness of what you're putting in your mouth and the foods that work for you and the foods that don't. And then there's some subcategories to that. And I'm kind of going into the general and the subcategories at the same time. So.
Well, that's one reason I'm glad you're doing that, is because some people really get extremely hung up on this, that, you know, I can't eat anything that's a void or whatever. But, you know, a lot of it is, you know, it's a good place to start, but you also have to go by how you feel on the food that you're eating.
Well, you know, everything in moderation. So my theory is I need to test my immune system sometimes. So let's do a whole bunch of avoids.
Right.
But there are different ways to use it. So if we go back to some of the O foods, you left that chart. Can we go back?
Oh, yeah, we can go back. Sorry. I thought we were done with
so
that one.
Yeah, so just on the fishes and then the beans and everything of how you prepare the beans and, you know, again, the nuts and seeds being raw and the oils, you know, it says coconut oil is an avoid on there, but I find that organic virgin cold press, not virgin, but the cold press coconut oil, when you have a really good brand, becomes a neutral. So, you know, I don't necessarily agree with everything on there, and some of the antigens that I've done differently or read on different reports, I think that some of them can change. So, okay, now we can go to the next one.
Okay.
So let's look at neurotransmitters. These little chemical connectors in the body, think of it as kind of like your email system, you know, like one part of the body sending an email to the other part, and the little neurotransmitters, like your web server, you know, hopefully it didn't go down. They secrete these levels of catecholamines, and these are like dopamine, epinephrine, you know, and what happens is it allows you to respond faster. You have a quicker response time to danger with the O-type because they were the hunter-gatherers. O-types also have these lower levels of what's called monoamine oxidase inhibitors. And that means that it breaks down those catecholamines, and they have to have a longer recovery time from this, from the stress. So actually, this whole chemical occurrence is, it can make the O's more prone to like manic depressive things, bipolar, schizophrenia, ADHD. A lot of this, though, is controlled by how those receptor sites to those neurotransmitters are working in the colon. So I find that any digestive system, no matter what, the blood test can be improved when you're improving your colon health. And L-tyrosine is one of those aminos that gets taken in. But, you know, if you're an O and you're constipated all the time, you're not going to get that tyrosine uptake, and that's found in red meat, but it's only found in rare. And if you're doing anything above medium rare, you're not going to get the tyrosine. So it's in sprouted wheat too, but a lot of the O's have that mucus production activity to wheat. So when you get the mucus, just remember that's your first line of immune defense. It's saying, okay, you really shouldn't have eaten this, you know, like you're standing there clearing your throat the whole time. So then you know that the neurotransmitters and those little electrical currents aren't connecting as efficiently as they should. The body always finds a way around it, but you don't want to keep taxing it.
Yeah, well, one thing I have to say is I've really found this to be true, that with a lot of O blood types, though, that have come in to talk to me, who are trying to do a vegetarian diet, they're often having problems with that. And, you know, when I have encouraged them to eat some red meat, or if they don't want to eat red meat, to take some a tyrosine supplement, it really helps to stabilize their mood. They feel better. They're much more stable, because by getting the tyrosine, they're constantly being able to feed into those catecholamines and keep the levels of those stable, since they burn them off really quickly. So, you know, you go into a stressful situation, you've got the catecholamines to help you deal with the stressful situation, but you also burn them off quickly, which means it takes longer to recover, especially if you're not getting tyrosine. Tyrosine is the precursor to basically all of your catecholamines, dopamine, epinephrine, and so forth. And these are the sympathetic neurotransmitters that allow you to deal with stress. So that's, someone asked, how does they balance that? It's because the tyrosine is the building block for all of them. And so if you're not getting enough tyrosine, you're not going to be able to replenish those neurotransmitters that you're burning off as an O blood type fast enough.
Right, and you're not going to be able to regulate thyroid in the long run either.
Yeah. Now, you had a sound effect on that slide when I flipped it.
Oh, did I?
Yeah, you did.
Fun. So I just put together some charts to explain how stress affects each of the blood types, because that seems to be the number one driving factor that impairs our immune system, impairs our digestive system, impairs our neurotransmitter uptake, you know, our hormones. It has a factor on everything. So high cortisol, O's tend to produce the least amount of cortisol in a response to stress. It's almost like, okay, stress is their motivator, like we talked about. But they do get susceptible when they stay under that prolonged stress for too long. They start going into the adrenal exhaustion, and they go into the fatigue mode, and they go into the sluggish thinking mode. And then usually with O's, I just put some things in here with cholesterol, because that's a big buzzword, you know, with cholesterol, which don't agree with the cholesterol numbers. But the cholesterol usually runs a little bit higher in O's. And when I say runs a little bit higher than 225 to 250 as a total cholesterol number, doesn't really mean anything, but total cholesterol number with O's is usually kind of an acceptable thing. It's other factors within that that you would have to look at. So O's really need anger management techniques, so contact sports are really good. I love golf.
Golf isn't a contact sport.
You get to hit something. Golf and tennis and kickboxing, you know. Something
to burn off that stress, yes.
Yes. Just the intense physical exercise, but in short spurts. You know, your O's are not your distance runners. They're not your marathon runners. Just intense short spurt physical exercises. Kind of mentioned minimizing the monotony. They, you know, O's are just not going to be your assembly line workers. Just not going to happen. We're really good at that first 80% of the project, and by then we're bored with it. We need to move on to a new one, so we need someone to finish the other 20%.
I know this from personal experience.
O's and A's, that's why they attract each other. Mm-hmm. The high CLA proteins in the diet, this is really important to get the CLA, which is conjugated linoleic acid, out of your good proteins, because that helps the O's release toxins out of the fat cells so that their immune system doesn't go into that hyperdrive that it tends to of attacking self, because it would start attacking the toxins in its own fat cells, and then it starts confusing the system after a while. Also, the CLA helps turn fat into muscle, and O's usually tend to develop muscle a little easier than some of the other blood types too. So a couple of the supplements that I put in that I've noticed that most O's, again, stereotypically, but most O's require to help them get to balance is CoQ10 with the blood pressure, the glucose, and triglyceride levels, especially an O that's doing a very imbalanced diet with sugars, refined foods, and a lot of carbohydrates. You're going to see triglyceride levels be affected the most in them. The CoQ10 can also help with a sluggish liver because it helps to improve how the high-density lipoprotein, or HDL, gets used, and how the LDL, or the low-density, there are two parts to that, a small part and a large part, but how the LDL oxidation gets inhibited. So it's actually helping the body understand hormone combustion, and then it helps make these neurotransmitter connections work even better. So it'll work on some of the inflammatory response that drives the LDL up in O's. So it also is an antioxidant, and O's under prolonged periods of stress have the oxidative stress to the cell. It helps with the maintenance, you know, of cell function just in the mitochondria, and that helps with the energy metabolism. So, and then licorice root, this is just an adaptogen, so that's for the adrenal, where they go into the adrenal exhaustion. It's also for the digestive system too, which O's most of the time don't have a problem with, but it helps them rebound faster from prolonged stress periods. And also to reduce that craving for a lot of the sugar and carbohydrates, that the O's tend to run 90 miles an hour and they want fast fuel. So their body gets into a habit of craving the carbohydrates for fast fuel, and then that goes into an inflammatory response for them.
But also because they have low cortisol levels, licorice root has cortisol preserving action to help keep the cortisol stable so that you avoid the excessive inflammation that O blood types are prone to as well. Someone asked what CLA is. CLA is conjugated linoleic acid. It's a fatty acid that's found in grass-fed meat and whatever, and it helps actually the body burn protein. It's interesting. If you even feed finish animal proteins with grain, the CLA disappears. They have to be actually eating on grass and not grain to get the CLA.
Yeah, it gets bound.
Yeah, it gets bound up. So, and someone asked about the licorice root for high blood pressure, and you do need to be cautious with licorice root with high blood pressure. If you're getting adequate amounts of potassium, it shouldn't be too much of a problem, but you might want to go with something else. And
like a deglycanized. You can do a deglycanized
yeah,
licorice.
But there's a lot of other questions being asked, and I'm kind of skipping over them. I'm going to take the questions at the end. So,
okay,
anyway.
Let's go to the next one.
Yep.
All right. So we've kind of covered some of this already, but some of the major health issues are that overreactive immune system. And with the allergy situation with O's, it's kind of like, you know, if you have a cup on your desk and you're pouring water into it, as long as the container is there, the cup to hold it, you don't really have a mess. But if you keep pouring that same thing in until it overflows, then you've kind of got a mess because the water came out of the cup and now it's all over your desk and it's running everywhere. It doesn't have any containment. So that's kind of how the O's immune system responds, that if you keep putting things in that are irritants, eventually it'll go into an allergy or inflammatory response. They are more prone to the Hashimoto's thyroiditis with the hyper and the mood swings and the ADHD. The manic depressive schizophrenia and Parkinson's sometimes too with the nerves under prolonged periods of stress. So the 5-HTT is the hydroxytryptophan, can be very calming, yet some O's can use it for sleeping. I don't find that's typically the case. It's usually just a general calming when you get the high stress levels. Glutamine, I think it's really fascinating. I love glutamine. I'm fascinated with it. it is the one amino acid that activates the cascade and the converting of all the other amino acids in the body. And it helps the body understand a protein and a carbohydrate and the uptake of that. So glutamine is very important, especially when you have those carbohydrate cravings. Now, if you do the glutamine, if you take too much, I wouldn't know this from experience in the past week or anything like that at all, because it's that O mentality, you know, if one is good, 10 must be better. So, hey, I got 1,000 milligrams of glutamine here. I think I'll take 4 of them. So, yeah, got a little jittery on that one. So it's good to start slow. I know if you're an O on this call, you're not going to listen to that. But I said it. You know, I put the disclaimer out there. So, the B-complex vitamins, and especially O's, we run them through our system so fast and they're water-soluble that we do flush a lot of them out the urine. So you just kind of have to be conscientious of hydration factors on this and having trace minerals to help activate. I go with trace minerals instead of a complete mineral with the O's because in the trace minerals that contains the silica and it contains the things that are going to drive the other minerals to the cell. And that's sometimes where those neurotransmitters connecting or the signaling messages with the O's that kind of gets lost. So the trace minerals also help with the hormone conversion. So they're really important cofactors, you know, for the cellular energy and the mitochondria, and also with DNA and how that's formed. Adaptogens, adrenal glandulars, the arabinogalactin actually helps the immune system with the O without overdriving it. Iodine, your black walnut, your seaweeds, things like that, even, you know, your potassium iodide supplements, those are all very good for helping an O rebalance a lot of the endocrine system. Stinging nettle just happens to be my favorite herb.
One of my favorite herbs, too.
Yeah, I love it. As an O, I just find a lot of my O's feel good on it, and it does feed the adrenal. It is high in the minerals. It's very nutritive, and it's in a nutritive form that the O's can actually utilize it because a lot of times they'll hypermetabolize stuff because they burn it up so fast. So let's go to the A, and we can go to the anal part. We all need an A in our life.
Okay, now I'm the A, so this is where extra comes in, okay? Because we A's are more laid back and more attentive to detail, and we tend to like not be like so like hyper and driving and everything and so forth. So we adapt well.
They adapt well to environmental changes better than O's. But the sensitivity in the digestive system is A's tend to get more upset stomachs and more lack of nutrient uptake and more digestive issues that cause other alarms in their body to go off, which usually it comes back to digestive system with the A because they have a weakened digestive system. So it's mostly because that antigen structure of that N-acetylgalactosamine matches a lot of bacterias. And when you think of the first line of immune defense coming in through the mucosal membrane lining, and if it looks like self, but it's not, it's kind of hiding, and it comes in, the first place it's probably going to be identified, and this is if they are a secretor, is in the digestive system. So the digestive system becomes kind of the brunt or the guardian of the immune system at that point and goes into a weakened state. And then again, with the red meat, I have to say this. If it is a grass finished, I think when you take the grain finishing out of the beef, you're getting different agglutination reactions in the blood. So I think there's a lot of good foundation. I think there's a lot of information that's been brought to light in the blood type diet that we might not have had. And again, it is a good guideline, but it's not a 100% guideline.
And I have noticed that as an A blood type, that if I get actual, totally grass-fed beef, it does not bother me. Whereas the other red meat, I really can't tolerate very well. So I think absolutely true.
Okay, and let's look at this, Stephen. Let's look on the A blood type, and we look at buffalo being an avoid. That is another red meat, even though it's low in fat. You know, a lot of times they are grass finished, but it's a different structure that's in there. So it's just different parts that come into play. So, okay, let's, and we talked about why they're prone to microbial invasion. Their strengths are they preserve and metabolize their nutrients. So they do hold on to their nutrient stores much better. They don't burn through them as quickly as the O. And the creative, domesticated, and organized, they get bogged down in details, though. O's can be A's can be very exacting. That can be their dark side, you know, of how they get hung up on stuff with the OCD. So they tend to go into the anxiety when they get flustered or overwhelmed with things, and that puts a state of stress with the lymphatic system and liver and other tissue states of being congested and stagnated.
So, okay. Yep.
So let's look how the A responds to cortisol. So they actually secrete more cortisol than any of the other blood types. So it's kind of
like and we don't burn it off very easily.
No, don't burn it off very easily because the body's too busy supporting the digestive system to do that. So it's kind of like they get stressed and it stays there and it stays there
and it builds up and it builds up and it builds up. And so like like we've talked about the O blood types going, why aren't you over it? You know, it's over. Yeah. That was like, 30 seconds ago.
I love the 4G commercials. That was so 30 seconds ago. That is such an O commercial.
That's an O blood type. As an A blood type, I look at that and go, that's sick.
Yeah, the stress levels. So those calicolamines, they have a hard time breaking them down, where the O's break them down too fast. So it's kind of like an overcompensation of the other extreme. And what happens is they may have, the biological age may be 40, but their cellular age may be 90 because they're breaking the cells down too fast. They're more prone to rapid aging. And some of the brain stuff with like the senility and the Alzheimer's, the dementia, because they just get that burnt out thing going on.
Because cortisol contributes to more rapid aging. So.
Right, and the longer that cortisol stays up, it's kind of like a little Velcro system. Cortisol goes up, and then insulin goes up, and inflammation goes up and stays up. So, and inflammation's the number one underlying reason for all disease, and that can drive that congestion and stagnation once it's up for too long is what leads to some of the abnormal cell or cancer cell activity being conglomerated. So the anxiety disorders, you know, more obsessive compulsive things because of there's just a lot of studies showing where OCD patients have higher levels of cortisol. So the adaptogenic herbs can help, you know, balance out and bring that back to normal on the cortisol levels. Okay, let's look at some more stuff on the A. Some of their avoids are grain-fed beef, some of the fish, especially some of the thicker fish, I find, or the bottom feeders or the more lipid-type fish. Wheat, you know, sprouted wheat is different. So you will see on some of the charts how the Ezekiel and some of those things go to a neutral because of sprouting your grains. The sprouting of the grains just changes so much of the chemical composition of it because the enzymes are held intact. So I won't go into every single grain of which one's an avoid and which one's a beneficial. I'm going to cover this as basically refined wheat and your white rice and your white flour and corn. And corn, I'm putting, you know, avoid for everyone because of the GMO on it. Again, with the A's on the dairy, we're looking at the A1 beta casein 2. Now, A2, because being the goat, the A's can be a little bit more tolerant of that, so it becomes more of a neutral. Again, with the nuts and seeds, the tomatoes, especially when those are cooked, makes them worse. So some of the oats and things like that are going to be more beneficial, and the legumes. But again, when you're soaking them and you slow cook them, that's going to be a key factor. So preparation of the food as well as your, you know, your resources of where the food came from are important, and not just with the blood type diet, with anything, with your supplements, with your foods. You know where it's coming from. Know what you're getting. Don't trust Monsanto.
Don't trust Monsanto.
All right, let's go to the next slide.
Okay.
I get way too political on the food stuff. Okay. With the over-responding to the stress, even minor stress, because it sends you on a little bit of that OCD thing, that increased cortisol, then what happens is that inflammatory portion of the cholesterol, the LDL, goes higher. So things that are going to help keep things in check for the A, it's not the food sources coming in on the cholesterol thing. It's what the body's producing. So calming exercises like yoga and Tai Chi and the deep breathing, those absolutely help the A bring their cortisol levels back to balance quicker. Not immediately, but quicker. Also, they do need more sleep. So sleep deprivation is going to allow the cortisol to be high. And A's just have to get off by themselves sometimes. They just, even if it's just 10 minutes, they need that replenishing from solitude. So some things that help to support those systems when they're weakened, adaptogens. Those nourish circulatory and help with oxidative damage. They protect the digestive system from the effects of stress and also help restore energy levels. In an overstressed nervous system. So it supports the adrenal. And the adrenal actually is also responsible for moving protein through the liver. So that is why the A's have to focus on that.
You know, I want to make a comment on this. When I was getting this thing put together, I was reminded of the fact that, you know, as an A blood type, I tend to run higher cortisol levels. And I looked at that and thought, you know, I'm getting definitely some signs of little issues with stress here, and so I basically just started taking some Siberian ginseng And it certainly just immediately started helping my mental clarity and my energy level, which again is just taking those adaptogens to reduce that cortisol reaction in the body so you're not like reacting as much to stress. So I think adaptogens are really, really important for A blood types.
If there's one thing that an A would take, it's finding the right adaptogen so that it would help with the digestive system and the stress. So, and the B complex can help that way with them too. More so if they tend to be dropping a lot of their nutrients because of stress, or and sometimes they're not eating because of stress, because when A's get really stressed, they just feel so upset they can't eat their stomach levels. So B's can help strengthen the nervous system and physical effects of stress, because A's are not your type that are going to go just, you know, to the wall and say, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to lift these weights, I'm going to just push myself. They're not anxiety, you know, they're not adrenaline junkies, they're more anxiety prone. So the B can help strengthen the nervous system that way and control some of the high LDL cortisol. Okay, let's look at, I think we have B's coming up next.
Well, we got a couple of things, just final things.
Oh, the health issue, sorry.
Yeah.
On the A, because you're an A and you pointed that out. I was done, 80% were done. Let's move on. No. Okay. The health issues, we've talked about the stress. The immune issue with asthma and allergies. Actually, one of the studies showed that 84% of all ear infections in children were in A blood types. And it's just because they can't recognize a lot of that bacterial stuff coming in. They do tend to run thicker blood, so you will see their AG ratios higher most of the time in blood reports. And they are more prone to the insulin resistance, so that's the hyperinsulinemia or the syndrome X, and that's connected, again, like we said, with that cortisol, with that going up. So some of the supplements, other than adaptogens and adrenal things, are digestive enzymes. A's don't produce enough hydrochloric acid to break the proteins down as part of the issue, so putting hydrochloric acid in tends to help. But it has to be done with food. Probiotics, especially with colon health, with A's, is very, very important because they do not break down those catecholamines very quickly. So the probiotics to repopulate the good flora of how they're taking up certain things is going to be really important. Digestive bitters to help them activate. I like safflower as well to help with the A's. And then the CoQ10 just for oxidative stress protection. Not so much as with the O, but it does help. Okay.
Now we get to talk about the bees.
Now we're in the bees. I know. It's our little small percentage of the population, our little 8% here. So the bees kind of came together with the Mongolians and the Himalayas, and they're more nomads. They also do better with altitude changes. They do better at higher altitudes. They do better with the change of season, and they do better in cooler weather. So a lot of bees that are living at sea level tend to have the most imbalance. But for the most part, the bees tend to be more balanced and flexible. They do semi, like the O, have a fairly strong immune system, except to viruses. So a lot of the viruses in the junk DNA, that's what a virus is, that attaches to a protein, that's how it gets to the body, the bees have a hard time establishing whether that's self or not self. They do adapt to dietary and environmental changes fairly well, and they're more of a balanced, so bees are balanced, omnivore. So they do well with a balance of the protein and the low glycemic vegetables. Okay. So some of their strengths are having a balanced nervous system, because a lot of your bees, you never know if they're upset or not. It's kind of like, I love the phrase, you know, water off a duck's back. It's like, you don't know. They're just so calm. They're always so serene. And inside, they can just be boiling. And sometimes they'll just have those explosions. But most of the time, they're pretty flexible. They're very outgoing, sociable. And they tend to have a fairly balanced digestive system. they can become overreactive to that stress when they hold it in for too long. So that would be more of a suppressed anger instead of a vented anger like the O. They take a little while to recover from stress when the cortisol goes high, but not like the A. They're kind of right in the middle between the O and the A. That's why they're the balance. O is an extreme and A is an extreme in each opposite direction, and B is right in the middle. They can go into, like, boredom, like a lack of motivation, lethargy, and, again, the viral thing. So let's look at the next slide. So some of their avoids. Chicken, yeah, I am adding chicken as an avoid for everyone, sorry, because all of this silly hormone antibiotic free that they're putting on there, it's not really true, and now we are at voluntary disclosure of GMOs in our food until after the election year's over in the U.S., so it's like, yeah, you can label it if you want to. So I just am telling, you know, I don't do chicken. They do better with pheasants and duck and quail and things. But pork's on here, yeah. I'm not a big believer in pork because the parasitical stuff with pork. So I would add lamb. The pork is in there because it causes the agglutination. And then the lamb is over here on the beneficials for them, the lamb and the venison and the buffalo, things like that. So seafoods to avoid. Some of those high lipid items like the lobster and the mussels and the shrimp, and then some that are okay for them are more of the white and the flakier and the good essential fats like the salmons and the sardines. The beans, again, all the preparation of that. The grains with the oats. But again, I mean, I think bees are going to notice the difference, and I had someone post that on something. With Pat, so thank you, Pat, about how, you know, she's a bee and she does not do well unless it's an organic oat that causes some of that sensitivity and that reaction. So, and it's the same, even though dairy is listed as a beneficial for bees, again, we're back to what type of dairy. So even though bees can do an A1, and it doesn't create as much of an inflammatory response in them, it still wasn't meant to interact with all of the synthetics they add back into the milk to make it whiter, the synthesized vitamin D, the flash pasteurization, the homogenization, and all of the heat components that destroy everything in it anyway. It still makes it not beneficial for a bee. So if a bee were getting raw milk, then it would be fine. So we're back to bees probably do better with an organic milk that's usually the shelf minimum requirement is about 140 degrees, but they're going to do better with a low temp and more of a cultured dairy like a kefir. Goat milk and the A2 cow's milk are going to be the best choices. The yogurts, they do okay with, but again, it's not the yogurt that has all of the sugar dumped in it or all the aspartame or the low-fat yogurt. You know, it's a good Greek organic yogurt. So walnuts are their beneficial nut. A lot of the nuts don't work so well with the bees. And then the cabbage, again, fermented. We're talking about different things there. So, okay, let's go to the next one. So some of the Bs, the blood type B and then the AB, just because it contains that B antigen, clear nitric oxide faster than the other blood types. So what nitric oxide does is it keeps the vessels open to lower blood pressure, and when you release nitric oxide too fast, they start contracting. So arginine is what is the precursor to nitric oxide, so it keeps the nitric oxide in solution a little bit longer to control vascular dilation for the B blood types because they tend to be prone to that constricted circulatory system. So they are also very intolerant of a lot of the carbohydrates and do a little bit better, even though, you know, the omnivore, when I say carbohydrates, we're talking about, you know, pastas and flours and grains and refined foods, okay? When we're looking at low glycemic index vegetables, then I'm not calling that a carbohydrate, just so you know. Okay. So The bees in
You're talking about starchy and sugary carbohydrates.
Exactly. Instead of carbohydrates.
Because your fruits and vegetables are much more complex carbohydrate and slower to break down. So it's like the high starchy and high sugary foods that raise the insulin levels high is what you're really.
Yeah, the refined starches. I guess we should relabel that. So with the bees, they are emotionally centered. They are really, B is for balance. They're the most balanced of the types. They do get sensitive to stress-related imbalances. They respond quicker, though, to reducing that, and usually their triglycerides tend to run high, especially if they're doing a lot of those starchy foods. So visualization and relaxation, they respond best to balanced with movement. So the meditation, deep breathing, but movement exercises, too. The bees are really controlled by the pineal gland. That's like the dominating organ. So doing that light and dark response of sleep, of going to bed when it's dark and letting the light wake you up, most bees will get so regulated, and their circadian rhythm and all of that will become, their clock will become so balanced they don't get a lot of imbalances in the system. They also have a tendency to not like to be pushed, so that rushing and they are systematic. I'm not saying anal, but systematic. Like if they have a system and they follow that system and it stays on track, it's not like an OCD attachment to it. It's just things flow better for them when they have a schedule. So other than the arginine that was mentioned with the nitric oxide, the lecithin can help balance out how they're using those triglycerides for a fuel for glycerol combustion in the cell. It also helps how they produce the healthy bile salts to emulsify the fats, because bees tend to do a little bit better with a higher fat diet. And that's the good fats, not the inflammatory, not your hydrogenated, not your trans fats, but all of your good fats. So reducing the blood insulin levels that can kind of damage the arteries or cause those little fissures in there or cause clots, lecithin is going to help to break some of the stuff down with that. Magnesium is key for B blood types because of the heart stress and lowering homocysteine levels. They tend to be more prone to higher homocysteine levels. And this inflammatory process from stress that can occur also can kind of give them that heart palpitation or that irregular heartbeat, especially if they're racing all the time. And magnesium helps reduce that. So the cellular energy and their endurance and everything can be increased by doing a magnesium supplement. Okay. Let's go to some of the health issues we've talked about with memory loss. They are prone to Alzheimer's. So brain and circulatory are the two weakest areas usually in a bee that tend to be affected. So the chronic fatigue, high blood pressure, and also UTIs, urinary tract infections. Important supplements, the ginkgo, the bacoba, ginkgo with circulatory bacoba also, and controlling insulin, the arginine we've talked about. Cranberry, juniper berry, just when that alarm goes off with the urinary tract stuff, if they're prone to that. Elderberry and astragalus for balancing, Eleuthera for balancing.
Because they're more prone to viral infections, right?
They're prone to viral, yeah.
And elderberry and astragalus are good for helping with the viral stuff.
And then minerals. Bees are definitely usually lower on minerals, so it's very important to replace minerals with bees. Okay, we're going to go to AB. So this is our 3% of the population, our enigma, but they are the universal receiver, and not just for other blood from other blood types, but in more ways than one. ABs do not miss a click on anything. They're observers. They're very good research people because they observe everything. They have a little bit of the A weaknesses and strengths and a little bit of the B's weaknesses and strengths. So their immune system tends to be a little stronger than the A type. They tend to be very charismatic, mysterious. That's the enigma part. So this is kind of a modern, they adapt more to certain conditions and higher stress living and more crowded cities. I think the ABs, there are a lot of AB types in Asia.
Well, my dad was an AB, and he could get along with everybody.
Yeah, they tend to adapt very well.
I mean, he's just, okay. He just could flow in a lot of different, you know, environments really well with people.
Okay. Well, it's like and that adaptability is definitely a strength, as well as being charismatic. They can have a little bit of an overly tolerant immune system because not only with the A part with the bacteria, the B type with the viral, they're kind of taking everything in a little bit. So, again, that puts a stress on that first line of immune defense with the digestive system. And that they are very different, you know, because they have a little bit of a component from each. So sometimes they feel alienated. They feel left out because they are, you know, they just have these different tendencies. So they are prone to being introverts. They can have, depending on, like, how they have grown up and what foods they started eating, if they start out with a very healthy, balanced childhood, they tend to not have as many problems digesting proteins and fats as an adult. But if they had junk food their whole life, then they're going to be more prone to having those weakened digestive issues. Okay. So the red meat and the pork and the chicken, they kind of get all the avoids there. But again, it depends, you know, the grains are what's in there as well. So some of the seafoods and the corn, again, for everyone. They do fairly well on turkey, and I would do, you know, like, and again, your heritage turkeys, we're just getting so many antibiotics injected into our food. Like 82% of all the antibiotics are sold to the food industry, whether it's cattle or poultry. And they do well with some of the tuna and the salmon, which is a little bit fattier fish, but they need that. And their rice and oats and spelt. With the dairy, we're looking at A2 dairy here again because it's goat milk, the organic sour creams and cottage cheese. Again, you know, just because we don't want the hormones and antibiotics in there because the ABs are going to be the most affected by hormones in the food. Okay, so let's go to the next one. Don't forget stress. They have that more immediate reaction and that inflammatory escalation more like the A part. So they are more sensitive to the stress, like the A. Their triglycerides tend to go up because the cortisol goes up. The way that an AB can control stress and how their health is and how they react to things is mostly by diet. So nutrition is the number one key element for AB blood types. It'll help with lowering that high glycemic index. It'll help with any lowering blood pressure. It's going to help with how they deal with stress. It's going to help with their immune system. So some of the mix between the meditation, visualization, deep breathing, they take a little bit of the A, a little bit of the B, and the sleep factor is important as well. So they don't like to be surprised. They don't like the adrenaline rushes. So very methodical and very balanced, more like, again, they're observers. So they like to observe things before they act. So it's kind of a, you know, not a reactionary type blood type. Rhodiola is one of your adaptogens, and that can help support the lymphatic system because with different things coming in and stressing the digestive and the immune system with the ABs, then keeping the lymphatic system clear is going to be very beneficial to their overall health as well. It also reduces some of the how the cells start living in that congestion and stagnation and start living off their own waste and it becomes anaerobic. So rhodiola can help prevent that anaerobic activity within the cell. And it also helps to repair those little broken linkages with DNA so that you're not getting abnormal replication of those cells that were damaged. Arginine is an amino, and, you know, and again, there are some contraindications to this if they're prone to viral outbreaks, you know, especially herpes outbreaks. And, of course, arginine is contraindicated, but if they're not, then it does reduce some of that nitric oxide generation, and it inhibits how the pro-inflammatory cytokines occur, so it reduces the inflammatory reaction in the body and balances blood sugar and the triglycerides. It does increase it decreases, sorry, oxidative stress. And it increases the blood flow to the extremities and to the capillaries, because not only, you know, on that outward level do the ABs become more introverted, but they tend to go within with everything. So they tend to take everything into the core, and there's not a lot of nutrient flow and sometimes capillary blood flow to the extremities either.
Kim, actually, I think there's an error on the slide. It actually, L-arginine increases nitric oxide generation.
Oh, it should say increases. Yeah, you're
yeah,
right.
Yeah, that is worded wrong. It increases, just so you know, that increases nitric oxide generation, not decreases.
Yeah, you're right. It should be increases. Thanks. Didn't catch that one. So on the health issues, just that tolerant immune system because they have a hard time recognizing viral and bacteria, ABs are more prone to parasites and leaky gut stuff. So it's very important for them to, you know, establish good colon health and do some parasite cleanses. You know, I usually recommend 2 to 3 times a year on that. Leaky gut, meaning that, you know, the porosity in the small intestine is open and they're getting too large of particles passing through, that's that weakened digestive system again. So they do become more prone to colon cancer. They are more prone to high blood pressure and blood clots. But then they go into the mood disorders like the O. So they get the whole gamut of everything. So tyrosine is going to be very important here too, to help with the mood disorders if they have a tendency to go into that up and down mood swing kind of thing. And with ABs, one thing that I usually coach them on is pay attention to, if you're feeling down, think about what you just had to eat about an hour to 2 hours ago and start putting patterns together with your diet, and you're going to be able to, you know, not have to do a bunch of supplements, but to work with it with your nutrition. Kudzu is very good for astringing with the leaky gut, and of course probiotics. And then the alpha-lipoic acid helps to reduce how they're hypersensitive to the insulin, and also to help reduce some of the triglyceride levels. And yellow dock with iron, because a lot of times with leaky gut and the parasitical thing, ABs will tend to have lower total iron levels. Their ferritin may be normal to high, but their total iron may be low, and their total iron binding capacity may be low. So just looking at the different patterns within the iron structures, usually yellow dock will take care of most of that, and then the glutamine. Okay.
Okay. So we've got quite a few questions, and we're going to go ahead and answer the questions. So but I just want to, before we do the question and answer period, just want to let you know, if you need help with determining your blood type, or other people, Tree of Light Publishing has blood typing kits, and they are on sale until the end of the month. So there are the prices. You get 10% off. The one kit is $16.20, and you get 20% off for 6 or more and 40% off for 12 or more. And you get an additional 10% off for the rest of this month. And some years back, Kim and Tree of Light Publishing, we put together these charts, blood type and nutrition charts, which are we have one for each of the 4 blood types, and this is what they look like on the front. These charts basically don't just cover which foods are beneficial, neutral, and avoids, but they also cover the zoning your diet, you know, balancing fat, protein, and carbohydrate intake, and cover whether foods are acid or alkaline. And they also have a useful list of potentially helpful supplements for each blood type on the back.
And I'm just going to add something to that too, Stephen, if
yes.
we go back to the chart
yes.
for 1 second.
Okay, I will.
On the colors on the chart, if anybody's doing the metabolic typing profiles, it helps to do it by color, that, you know, your reds are your proteins, your orange are your protein and carbs mixed, your greens are your low glycemic, your browns are your high glycemic, blues are fats, and your purple are your fat and protein combinations. So it really helps if you're doing the metabolic typing profiles to put it together by color, so it's not so overwhelming to people. So for an example, with a B as an omnivore, doing 50%, you know, protein and 50% from the green category. So people are more willing to work with you when you put it in terms of color instead of saying you have this, you can't have this, you can't have this. That seems to be such a negative thing that we're so possessive as Westerners. We want to hold on to things. So give them something back, okay?
Yeah. The blood type charts, we have them as individual laminate charts, and we are lowering the price. We actually are able to produce them at a lower cost, so we're passing the savings on to you. They used to be $15 each. Now we're going to sell them for $12 each, and we're going to put them on sale for this month for $10 each, and if you buy four or more, you get them for $9.60 each. So those are the individual laminated charts. And we also, for people who want to use this, we have quite a few people who use this with their clients. I do. You do, right, Kim?
I hand one out to everybody.
Yeah, we give these to our clients to teach people how to eat healthy, you know, and so we sell them in tablets of 25. That we used to sell the tablets of 25 for $50, which is, you know, $2 per chart. Now we're reducing it down to $40, which is a little better savings. And if you buy three or more charts, packs of 25 charts, you get them for 32. With six or more, you get 28. So basically, one thing to you'd probably want two O's, two A's, one B, and one AB if you were going to get six sets of them, because that's about how they're going to break down, and you're going to go through the ABs very slowly. But anyway, they're available at treelight.com, or you can call our toll-free number, which is there on the screen, 800-416-2887, for the end of the month to get these. Now let's talk about the question and answers. First of all, the charts don't list secretor and non-secretor for the person who owns that.
85% of the population are secretor anyway, so unless you have somebody that's not responding well to the food plan, then do a secretor, non-secretor test.
Yeah, the tablets and charts are exactly the same, except the charts are laminated and the tablets are just tear-off sheets that you hand to people. Let's see. And someone asked about testing for secretor, non-secretor. Do you know how you do that, Kim?
Yeah, it's just the saliva kit that you can look it up online from North American Pharmacol, and they have that.
Okay. Someone asked if it's easy to recognize blood types by body shape.
We tried to do that based on the glandular body types, and no. more by personality, and I guess the easiest way to recognize is by digestive characteristics, you know, if foods feel heavy or they pass through quickly or, you know, what they respond to.
Yeah, so the secretor, non-secretor is a saliva test. Now, one thing I want to just say in general, okay, we are, you know, this is all kind of general guidelines. It's a starting place. You always have to have some place to get started to try to experiment with things. And people always ask a specific thing. Can a blood type have this particular supplement or that particular supplement, blah, 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 blah. And you know what? Don't worry about it that much, okay? One of the things we've tried to...
The bottom line depends on how their digestive system's working in the first place before I even go into a lot of the supplementation stuff.
Yeah. And so you just would have to look up the, you know, secretor test online is what Kim said. The caution for L-arginine is that L-arginine tends to promote it is an antagonist for L-lysine, which helps fight viral infections. So if you have herpes or something like that, you taking a lot of L-arginine may tend to give you more breakouts. And so that's where there's a contraindication for L-arginine. Someone asked, would blood clots be extreme agglutination?
Blood clots are more dependent on fibrinogen than just agglutination. So, there's also a genetic propensity to that. It depends on, lysine can have an effect on blood clotting too, of attracting plaque and things to certain areas. So it's going to be more fibrinogen dependent than it is agglutination dependent.
Yeah. The value of kudzu for the AB blood type has to do with the fact that the AB blood type is prone to leaky gut, and kudzu is a very good remedy for helping to astringe the gut and help with leaky gut. Someone says that they're an AB and they notice that their stomach eats after hurts after they eat. They tried food enzymes, but it really didn't do much to get bloated. They said, also, does elevation have anything to do with AB? I go back to the SIBO level and I feel great. Come back to Utah, my whole body goes weird. Not sure. Have any
That's
comments
a lot
on
to
that?
Answer in one question, but if you are having a sensitivity to hydrochloric acid as an AB type, you might do better with just plant enzymes or even something like turmeric or some other digestive like bitters.
Okay. Let's see here. What blood work do you have to do to find out if you have sticky blood?
There's several different things you can do. You can do dark field, where you draw the blood and look at it under the microscope, and you'll see the sticky, the relays, and things in there. If you're doing a standard blood test with your doctor, you have three protein factors on there. You have total protein, you have albumin, and you have globulin. Then there's a mathematical calculation listed on there from the albumin and the globulin, which is called an AG ratio. And if the AG ratio is on the high end of normal to higher outside the range of normal, then you usually have stickiness in the blood.
Okay. And this is not just about platelets, right?
No, this, platelets are in your CBC, so that's a totally different measurement.
Right. Okay. Someone says that they're an A blood type and they feel better with meat and they gain weight with beans. Well, then eat meat and don't eat beans.
Well, and that could be, you know, as an A, sometimes you can have an O recessive. So
yes.
It's a different reactionary thing. So you just want to monitor that your nutrients are getting taken into the cell. That's the biggest thing. If you feel better when you're doing a rare to medium rare type beef, make sure that you are getting the right quality on that, that it is not a grain-fed beef.
Some people wanted to point out that there are non-GMO corn still available, like Seed Savers, Shea Exchange, and some places have the Hopi corn or blue corn, whatever. It's just
the blue corn is too, and I try to get that one. And yeah, if you're raising your own corn or you can get some of that, that's absolutely phenomenal. Then it changes the whole picture. But most of the corns that most people are used to buying are at the grocery store or even at the health food store. It doesn't mean just because it says organic at the health food store that it's not a GMO.
Okay. And we're not saying that no food could be cooked. Okay. It should be cooked. And that cooking it turns it into a void. It's that cooking.
No, quite the opposite on some of them.
Cooking could actually make the food less of a problem in some
cases.
Exactly. In other words,
some of them it does make it worse. So it just depends on which food it is.
Yeah.
And how it's cooked. You know, anything you microwave is going to turn it into an void. Period.
Now, what about the concern for parasites with rare or medium rare meat?
If you sear the meat on high heat on each side, you're going to kill that off. I don't ever worry about parasitical stuff with even on sushis and fish. If you're doing what's served with it, which is usually the wasabi and the ginger, those are your actual vermifuges. If you take some black walnut or some iodine before eating it, then you have those protectant factors anyway.
Also, if you freeze meat for, I can't remember, about a week at a low temperature, it kills any parasites. So you don't have to worry about that. Do you know if the testing was on raw soaked nuts or just probably the plain raw nuts, right?
I don't even know that the testing was on all nuts. Some of that was archived and it could have been on roasted.
Okay. Now, there's a couple of things about here about the one person said that they're an O-type vegan for the past 5 years and their blood work shows low B12 and iron. And that's a very typical problem on vegan diets. And you and I don't recommend vegan diets. So you want to make some comments on that?
Well, if you are an O-type and you are doing a vegan for religious or moral purposes, there, you absolutely have to take a complete amino acid supplement. You have to take a bioavailable methylcobalamin B12. The cyanocobalamin will not work. You have to do a methylcobalamin. And you're also going to have to supplement with tyrosine, with trace minerals, and you're going to have to supplement with enzymes. So you're going to have to put, I'm not saying it can't be done because there are religious and moral purposes why you choose that. So I don't think it's the absolute best choice for an O, but if that is your choice, just know that you're going to have to supplement.
Yeah. My thing on this is that if you're doing it for health reasons, don't. Okay? If you're doing it for spiritual reasons, because you're trying to follow some kind of spiritual path, be aware that most people, you know, who are spiritual people who have adopted that do not have to work in the kind of environment that we do. They go into some kind of monastery or ashram, or they can meditate for hours a day and that sort of thing. In the kind of stress that we have, that's very difficult to maintain that kind of a diet and keep your health. So you do have to do supplementation if you're going to be a strict vegan. But, because, you know, like you said, B12 you can't obtain from any plant source whatsoever, so you've got to supplement with it. And you're going to have to supplement with amino acids, because it's very hard to get all
and
of
iron.
The amino, and iron, all the amino acids and nutrients you need from that. And like I said, many times I've had people who come in and who are O blood types who have been vegetarians. Kim and I have both seen this. And when we encourage them to go back to eating some red meat, they improve their health. And I know I've had people get mad at me, like, how can you do that? But if you get a good grass-fed, ethically raised meat, just even 3 to 4 ounces of it a day can really make a good difference.
Or raise your own. I mean,
raise your own.
Sustainable living is about raising your own and understanding where it comes from and having gratitude for that. So
okay. So someone asked about the cattle starting off with grain and finishing with grass. No, that's not okay. What
it can be. It can be.
Well, actually
they have to be on the grass. It takes 90 days to have the grass finishing to counteract a lot of the grain stuff.
Well, the one way that some people have, in nourishing traditions, Sally Fallon says that sometimes when the cattle have been grass-fed and then have a little bit of grain for a week at the end, that's actually kind of mimicking the natural feeding cycle, since the cows would be grazing on the grass after, you know, it starts to develop seeds in the fall. But
it depends on what kinds of grain they're feeding them, because if it's the standard cob, then you know it's not going to work.
Right,
but
right. Yeah, so.
Yeah,
but basically they're better. It's better off if they're, you know, raised in the free range and not fed.
Totally
grass.
Because that's what kills off their parasites too. You know, and then there are just so many other things to consider. I've learned a lot living in Wyoming that, if you go out and kick a cow pile after 2 weeks, you know if they're digesting the food or what their consistency is or not, of how it dries, and if it turns gray of what they're being fed, because they're not supposed to turn gray, and if it still has fiber in it. So we could do a whole class on cow pie analysis.
Okay. I put this message out, and some people obviously didn't see the note I put, but yes, the handouts are available at modernherbalmedicine.com, and the recording will be available at modernherbalmedicine.com, and I will send everybody an email about that. Some of you registered after I sent out the email, so I'll be sending it out again. Are fermented foods okay for O blood types?
Usually the fermented foods work well, because the O blood types, with those proton pumps in the stomach of how they release acid, the fermentation can help.
And someone asked about if you have celiacs, does it make a difference if you don't do grain? If you have celiacs, you shouldn't do grain.
You shouldn't do grain. And we're getting into some minute areas here. This is good, 70 to 75% of the general public as a guideline to eat. When you have circumstances like celiacs or leaky gut or different, diagnoses that are going to alter how the digestive system performs or even how neurotransmitters are taken up, then it kind of goes out the window because you're going to have to make exceptions. So there are exceptions to every rule when you have an extreme condition going on.
Yeah. The positive and negative has nothing to do with the blood type diet, so don't even worry about it. Okay, that's a whole different issue. So a couple of people put in some questions about that. Can you please repeat which three types of food raise the cholesterol in O blood types?
The carbohydrates will and the sugar will, and especially with trans fats and certain hydrogenated fats. But I have to make a footnote on that because you can increase all the way up to 9,000 grams a day of dietary cholesterol, and it's not going to move your total cholesterol more than about 4 to 6 points. The cholesterol output or your total cholesterol number is not contingent on dietary cholesterol whatsoever.
It's about how your liver is making cholesterol because that's
where... It's about how the liver is producing cholesterol in
fact,
reaction mostly to immune factors.
In fact, some of the people with the lowest cholesterol in the world have the highest dietary cholesterol.
Yeah, the Maasai tribe has 66% fat in their diet, and they have the lowest risk of cardiovascular and some of the most balanced cholesterol in the world.
Someone has mentioned that they're an A blood type and have many O blood type problems, so they're wondering if that could mean they have an O recessive, and very possible.
Potentially.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or you just hang out with too many O people.
Some O's like to mix their greens, mustard with collards and turnips, and also they love their cornbread with the greens. Is that okay? I mean, it's okay if you're not having problems with it.
Well, I don't think it's okay because if it's a GMO corn, then no, it's not okay.
No, it's not okay. Yeah. Okay, and then someone asked about nettles. Nettles is just an herb. You can buy it from whatever company you have confidence that it's nettles, and it works very well made into a tea. It's actually a very pleasant tea.
There's a nettle soup, too, that's really good.
Yeah, you can actually throw it in soups and stews, and it also you can get it as a tincture in capsules, but it actually works better just taking it as a tea or throwing it into food. It's a lot like eating spinach or beetroot.
Parsley, yeah.
Okay, if you're an A and you tend to have high cortisol, does that mean you shouldn't take the Nature's Sun, the NSP cortisol formula?
Well, the cortisol formula is lowering the cortisol.
Yeah, that's
so that would be yes.
Yes, the cortisol formula, the NSP cortisol formula doesn't raise cortisol, it lowers it. So that would be okay. Organic corn would not be GMO because right now the organic standards don't allow for GMO unless we get the lobby by industry and then they're going to, Monsanto is going to take over the organic thing and we'll all have to grow our own food if we want to make sure we're getting organic.
Well, unless you know where you're getting your corn
yes.
And some of the seed places that were mentioned are very reputable, but I mean, even some of the seed places have been sold out and they've been altering, you know, and genetically modifying corn since 1968. It's one of the first ones with white potatoes. So I don't know how you trust that unless you actually test it. The blue corn's probably going to be the one that's less likely to be altered, but even, you know, there's a couple articles out right now, even Whole Foods is allowing up to 15% GMOs and things that are coming in. There was new bill that was looked at the 1st of January, and I don't have the number on that, and I think it was a House bill that GMOs are voluntary discretion of disclosure right now. Canada did not pass it, and Europe did not pass it, but the U.S., with an election year, elected to bypass it until next year. So just look up, you know, I don't have all of the data right in front of me, but just look up your facts on the GMOs and some of the FDA rulings that have come out lately because there's some pretty new ones that have come out, and we'll talk about it in that movie Farmageddon as well.
Yeah, this is really – there's a lot of crazy things going on with this right now with the thing. Okay. When you soak nuts and seeds, it makes them more digestible because nuts and seeds, being in a dormant state, tend to contain enzyme inhibitors and things that block the absorption of minerals. So if you read Nourishing Traditions by Sally Fallon or study the work of Weston Price, you'll find that all native peoples soaked nuts and seeds, beans, grains, nuts and everything before they ate them to break down those enzyme inhibitors and make the nutrients more bioavailable. Whether that changes it from an avoid to a neutral is iffy, but it's definitely going to make the nutrients more bioavailable and the thing more digestible.
It breaks down that long chain polymer, that chitin binding lectin, and when you soak them a little bit. So just makes it easier to break it down. It doesn't mean that it won't cause agglutination.
Okay. Two people asked about adaptogens for A's. And the fact is that whatever adaptogens work well with you. Kim mentioned rhodiola, which is a very astringent or drying adaptogen, which is actually better for people who are prone to be on the damper, moister kind of side of holding on to moisture, whereas the Eleuthero, which I called Siberian ginseng out of old habits, dying hard sometimes, but Eleuthero is more of a good one for people who, like me, who tend to run on the drier side, although it's kind of more neutral. So the adaptogens depend on kind of your constitution and what works for you. Other adaptogens include ashwagandha. Let's see what else. Shizandra. Shizandra is another adaptogen I do really well with. So you just kind of have to experiment around which adaptogens work best for you.
And some of the withania is one of my favorites, too.
If you grow your own food, I would definitely look into heirloom varieties of corn and potato that haven't been genetically modified. You can get those from a number of companies that, you know, produce heirloom seeds and everything, and that's definitely, you're going to be better off. Someone asked about Siberian ginseng making you jittery. It doesn't make me jittery. But someone asked said that 5-HTP, they're an O, and 5-HTP makes them jittery. And you mentioned that if you take too much of it, it can make you jittery, right?
Well, and it's all, again, we're getting into some more sublayers here that it's going to be contingent on how the autonomic nervous system is functioning. That if you're more dominant parasympathetic, then you're going to have a little bit different response to things, especially sympathetic suppressants. And, you know, if you're more sympathetic dominant. So it does depend on where your autonomic nervous system is functioning, too, of how you're going to have that.
Someone asked about, is licorice okay for a type 1 diabetic? Possibly not. That would not be a good choice for a type 1 diabetic. And also, with adrenal exhaustion, someone mentioned, would adrenal support even be better than licorice root? And absolutely it would. I mean, mm-hmm. An adrenal glandular is going to be more potent if you've got a definite problem. So you definitely can look into the whole issue of heirlooms.
As an adrenal glandular combined with the methylcobalamin, B12, and zinc would be a good combination for that.
Yeah. Someone said that grass-fed beef is going to be tougher than grain-fed beef, and it's going to have a little less fat. And go ahead.
It does
Kim.
Have less fat, and it's going to depend because I want to clarify here that it's grass finished, not just grass fed, because there is a difference. So on a grass finished beef, it can have a little bit more consistency to it, but only if you overcook it because it does have less fat. It's also hard when you're trimming out. A totally grass-finished cow, too, because there's not a lot of fat, and sometimes they'll get it cut too close to the cartilage. So it's depending on how they're processing it, sometimes of whether it gets tougher or not.
Someone said they get free-range chickens from a local farmer. They're a B blood type. They eat it occasionally. Again, one of the things that we want to make clear is it's okay to eat avoid foods, you know, as part of your diet, as long as you're not making them the bulk of your diet.
And it's not what you do once in a while. It's what you do every day that counts, and everything in moderation. Let me see if I can find any more cliches.
And of course, the GMOs, I don't know that – how do you think that applies to eggs?
Well, with the grain, if they're eating the GMO grain, then definitely.
Yeah, I mean –
because you have to remember, GMO is a genetically spliced and – adhered to a different protein, and it's going to adhere in meat structures and eggs and other protein structures more readily.
Okay, someone asked about taking CLA in a base of safflower oil, and safflower oil is an avoid for O's. I wouldn't even think that would be an issue with you. I mean, the benefits.
Safflower is an herb. Safflower oil is because of how hot they process it, of how they're extracting it with high heat. If it's a cold press safflower oil, then it's different.
When you say minerals for bees, is that trace minerals like for O's?
Yeah, I usually tend to use trace minerals. I like either ionized minerals or trace minerals for most types.
Okay. And ginkgo biloba for bees is actually to help their brain. They don't have to have Alzheimer's to be taking that. It's just, you know, if they
no,
want
to... No, it's just for neurotransmitter and neurological conductivity.
Let's see. That one's already been answered. Someone, okay. I've got that one. Got that one. Okay, let's see. Someone is asking about a specific recommendation for, but we can't give specific recommendations for specific clients because that would require us like interviewing you and getting more information, you know, about the specific client because that's what we do. So, you know, those of you who, you know, may have asked questions about a specific person, we don't know. I mean, Kim and I both spend a lot of time and do a lot of, you know, investigation. Kim does blood analysis and I do iridology and kinesiology and tongue and pulse and other things to help determine, you know, what the complete picture of what's going on. This is part of the picture. This is some tools to help you, but you can't work out a program for a person just based on what blood type they are and what disease name some doctor has given them. So,
well, and that's just chasing the alarm, Stephen, and looking at blood work and looking at one factor. You know, when I spend a lot of time with somebody in a consultation, what happens is, you know, we're focused on uncovering this little arsonist that's starting all these forest fires. It's making the alarms go off in the first place. So in unraveling that, it does take that, you know, intake of going through case history and what you're taking and looking at your blood and looking at your urine and looking at your saliva to unravel some of this. And by the time you do all of that, I really want to spend more time with food and nutrition with people, but I usually only have about 10 minutes left in the consult time to do that. So that's why I use these charts, and I use the theory of a general application. And each time we go into different layers of this. So we start out very simple of them just understanding, you know, what a beneficial and neutral is, how different cooking procedures or buying different types of that might change that within their system, because people can only handle so much information on the first visit, and you don't want to push them off the deep end of the pool. So it's just to scratch the surface to bring them to more conscious awareness in that part of their consult with by using the charts. Then the next time they come in, you go into maybe metabolic profiling of whether they need more protein or not. And then you go into a little bit different layer with alkalizing, and you go into a different layer each time. So it's baby steps. This is just a good introduction to getting people to have conscious awareness of what they're putting in their mouth.
Yeah. Someone asked that the blood typing kits, do they have a shelf life? And not that I'm aware of. I mean, they should be good for several years.
It should have an expiration date on it. The only thing is you can't store them in heated areas because those antigen serums on there will dry up and they won't get activated by the water. They are in a sealed foil pouch. So I usually, after 2 years, I sometimes, if they have been under a heated area, I'll toss them. But if there is an expiration date right on them.
And you can mix or match the tablets. So in other words, when you says three or more, that you could buy an A, you know, an O and a B, and that you'd still get the discount. Drinking water has nothing to do with secretors and non-secretors. And let's see. Is there any correlation between IgG allergies and sensitivity and blood testing, blood and the blood type?
There can be. I mean, you have the O's that are more susceptible, that they do have sometimes more of a flare-up with the IgG or the IgA antibody reactions. A's tend to, even though 85% of your immunoglobulins are going to be IgG, it's the most dominant one, A's will tend to show up more things with IgE antibodies because that goes more related to food sensitivity digestive issues. So it, it just depends. It's not an absolute given. But, you know, for the most part, some of the food sensitivities will show up through the IgG with oats.
Okay. Wow. Okay. I don't want to keep you too long, Kim. we've got a lot of people.
Let's do two more questions and we'll finish up.
Yeah, because there's just so many questions. I think we can't answer everybody's questions. Would you spell that specific B12 that vegetarians should be taking?
Oh, yeah, methyl, methyl, and then cobalamin is all B12, is cobalamin.
So B12 is cobalamin, so you want a methyl B12.
Yeah, you either have cyana, methyl, or hydroxy. Usually hydroxy is only an injection, so methyl.
Okay. Should O blood types fighting cancer eat meat?
There's so many schools, like Gerson's school, on doing more of a cleansing program. I'm going to go with, I think the more you confuse the body when it's in a state of distress of not putting the same things in over and over and over, that if you confuse it a little bit, it creates a different immune response. So it depends on how much congestion and stagnation is in the body, of how much cleansing you would do. It would depend on the vitality of the person and what stage of cancer they are, of what you're going to do. I am not totally oppositional to meat during cancer therapy, but again, it will depend on a lot of things. What is their vital health and their strength look like going into it? What treatments have they been doing? Are they doing chemo? Have they opted for something else? What stage they are? What part of the body the cancer's in? And definitely where the beef's coming from. So I can't give you just a blanket answer on that, because it's a very chemical balance, biochemical custom response of that person.
Yeah.
Sugar is a big one that I will put a blanket response on, that everyone has to cut out sugar and refined carbohydrates if they're dealing with any type of cancer.
Yeah, okay, so this is a good question, and we'll probably have to finish on this one. Okay, is the 70-30-80-20 rule for the avoids? Yes, that means that 30% or 20% of your diet can be avoids for just, you know, general health practice. So you're going to be okay with certain levels. And someone mentioned about, well, since the lectins are proteins, does digestion affect the lectins? And that's true, isn't it, Kim? I mean,
yes.
Better digestion, better enzyme activity, you're going to have less reaction to the lectins than if you have poor digestion,
yeah.
Right?
Okay. The thing is you can cheat on everything, all right? And they have things called deflectors that you can take to reduce the amount of agglutination in the blood when you've done avoid food. Well, a lot of your plant-based enzymes will react that way in most blood types. A lot of your probiotics will help prevent, you know, lectin. A lot of your alternatives as far as blood purifiers can change. Natokinase can change how your agglutination response in the blood occurs. But are you going to become reliant on those all the time instead of becoming conscious? It's a Band-Aid for the moment, okay? So, you know, you're out, your blood sugar's on zero, and you're starving. You have to eat something that's an avoid, which is far more of an extreme than I'm willing to consider. But if that happens, then, you know, you do some enzymes. It's all good. So, yes, you can alter how the blood and lectins and agglutination how the agglutination's occurring in the blood with different things.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we've really come to the end of our time, so I apologize that we couldn't get to everybody's questions. Kim, would you, if people want to get a hold of you for a consult, how far out are you booked?
I am booking into June right now. So if you want to, I know, I'm sorry. if you want to give me a call though, and we have any cancellations, we'll put you on that list. But yes, you can call my office. It's 307-277-2466, and you can also email us, and it is balanced with an ED, balanced health, health, solutions, plural with an S, @yahoo.com.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll Thank you so much for your participation. The webinar will be posted online. I will send everybody an email to the link. It will be posted at modernherbalmedicine.com. The handouts are already posted at modernherbalmedicine.com, and the webinar recording will be posted there as well. And someone asked one last thing. Are you going to do a blood chemistry class again, Kim?
I knew somebody was going to ask that question. Not at all. Yes, I am planning on trying to schedule one in May, and I will just give that to Stephen to post via Tree of Light and just watch through the website there, I suppose. But right now, probably going to be May.
All right. So thanks again, Kim, for all your good information. I'm sure that everybody was able to learn a lot. I certainly learned some good things, and we'll have you on another webinar soon so we can have people learn from your wisdom. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Stephen.
Yep.
Okay, bye.